Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Very pleased to have Brad Dixon in studio with us today. We're recording this interview on July 12th of 2019. I know we'll upload it probably today, maybe play it back on the airways a bit later. He's actually in town for a Saturday golf outing at the Mercer County VFW. So once a hometown kid, always a hometown kid, right?
Yeah.
With the golf clubs out.
Yeah, I used to be a member of the country club and played league and enjoyed that. And then would play the various outings, the Mercer County Health and the VFW tournament a lot. I worked for Donnie Russell when I went through high school and college, and he kind of got me into golf, and he's going to be there tomorrow, so it'll be good to see him again.
Yeah, it's always nice when you can name drop a bunch of local people, and you play on Josh Osborne's team, right, a Westmore grad.
Yeah, Josh, it's kind of funny because his dad, Randy, and my dad were best friends when they went through school, and it just kind of worked out that we were growing up. He was a year older than me, but we played summer baseball together, and then obviously football and basketball, and we've stayed in touch. So he asked me if I wanted to play, and I said yeah, so here I am.
All right, so again, what class at Westmore?
Class of 2002.
So how many times, and your first year teaching at Camp Point was what?
2007.
So how many trips, I was thinking about this today, how many trips do you think your mom and dad have made?
Honestly, I think I've been coaching there 12 years, I bet they've only missed a handful of games. And sometimes it was because they had something going on, or maybe we were playing all the way down Hardin or something like that. But, they've already got the schedule and they've got their vacation worked in where they can we'll go to a Friday night game and then go down to Branson and then come back through for the next Friday night game. But, it gives them something to still go out and watch. And, they know our guys and they get excited for the games. And it was fun for them to be able to go on the run we had last year. And I didn't know it, but they had their hotel rooms booked in Champaign about a month ahead of time. So I'm glad they didn't tell me
that.
They had
much confidence in you then.
Yeah.
So, and then conversely, I ask you, how many times do you think your two brothers have made that trip? Now, Josh still lives in Aledo. Derek lives over in Iowa. How many times do you think they've made the trip?
Oh, they've made it to a lot of our big games, and they were both there at the state championship game. And my brother's big into his church, and he's got kids through all his sports. So he's a very busy guy. My younger brother lives in Cedar Rapids, and he has a 1.5-year-old, almost 2-year-old, and he's teaching there and taking master's classes and all that stuff. So, they're busy, but they still follow and wish me good luck and stay up with everything. So,
do you ever at a time think sometimes maybe you take a little bit of this for granted, or do you have to pinch yourself and sometime and say, man, I better show my, am I showing my appreciation enough? Because you can get so caught up in what you do and take for granted some of the things that maybe you feel at sometimes are outside of what you do, but realistically they're really inside of what you do because you're only as good as your foundation, as they say.
Yeah, I think early in my career, it was football, and I never really stopped and let it all soak in. And so I really tried this year because I knew we had a good team, and I knew we had a chance to do big things, to kind of try to live in the moment and, cherish each win and not always just automatically go to the next team and really thank those people that have helped us along the way, whether it's, back here at home or, it's down there. And, former coaches like Bob Stockham, he'll show up on a Friday night, or, I'll hear from Mick Lauck or Carl Carlson or, Fred Lucas and all these guys that I've had a chance to either coach with or play for. We still stay in touch. I still do Fantasy Football League with Jim Campbell and Mick Lauck and Steve Williams and Josh Fordyce.
Steve Lauck. I love Lauck. When people name drop.
We still have that. We've been doing that league probably for 15 years. I don't even know, but it's still fun. And so we still meet at Mick's house in August or September, as long as my schedule works out. And so it's more fun to meet Darren Bazaar. He's also in it. I forgot about him. And, so it's always been a good time.
I bet you Lauck does a great job researching and drafting, and doesn't draft by the seat of his pants and doesn't want all the Bear players, probably.
We always laugh. Usually Steve Williams or Jim Campbell will say something about Mick's draft. I'm not sure in all the years Mick's been in it he's ever won, but we always get a chuckle about some of the guys that he drafts. He might draft a guy that's got a season-ending injury, and then we'll just start laughing and say, hey, man, you picked him. He's all yours. So,
do you remember the first time that you ever played in organized sport?
It would probably just be, I would say, Little League. Actually, I think it was Bear Country Wrestling.
That was like the first competitive win or loss thing.
I think I remember, you know, they used to come down to the elementary school there in New Boston, and they would bring the mats down, and for like a week we would have Bear Country Wrestling. Actually, a few years ago, my mom found a little singlet now that could fit my son. It's a little green singlet. You know, I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and that was one of the first things. And the coolest thing I remember was the high school wrestlers came down, and they worked with you, and it was just awesome because you just looked at those guys, and they were so big, and you're like, wow, these guys are coming down and helping me out. And then my parents were heavily involved in the New Boston Little League, and so we raised the money, and the school chipped in, and we did new fencing and, you know, built a concession stand, and my dad went around and put concrete around all the lights. Kevin Fike was big into that, Mike DeFreeze, you know, a lot of those guys, and I umpired games down there, and then getting into basketball. I remember when back in the day when the head coaches couldn't coach the team in the summer. So my freshman year, actually, Pat Lower was our coach because, I'm not sure where he was in his career at that point. So that would have been like in the late 90s, 97, 98. But he was coaching our summer league team. We used to go to Galesburg and play in that. I think it was AYBT basketball back then. And so that was kind of cool to have that. And, you know, I'm thankful now that coaches can coach their kids in the summer. But I know we didn't do all the things that people do these days. So we played our local little league and you know, a few basketball things, and that was it.
Well, and that's the big change that we're dealing with, and people are trying to figure out what way do you go. Are they ever going to be able to figure stuff like that out with, you know, travel club sports versus, you know, staying local with your school, staying local with your town? I mean, my belief is the genie out of the bottle is out of the bottle, and it's never going to be the way it was, even though people speak longingly of that.
Yeah.
It just the dynamics just don't allow you to do it anymore.
No, my personal belief is less is more. From a football perspective.
So but that's changed a little bit, right? You've had a come to Jesus moment, and I think a lot of guys are having that moment because it's hard mm-hmm. to sit there and say less is more.
Yeah, I mean when I first,
because when you're sitting in the summer and say, well, could we be getting better now?
Right.
Well, maybe you are getting better by mm-hmm. this kid not constantly having to worry about football every day or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think the research changed a lot of that. You know, I was just reading an article yesterday. It was the first part. The second part's going to come out with, you know, all of these injuries that these NBA players are seeing when they're 21, 22, and it goes back to things that they did when they played AAU and all this stuff through 10 and 11 and 12, and these kids never get out of a season. You know, we have baseball kids right now that – you know, probably started hitting and doing things in January. They played their high school season. Now they're playing their whole summer season every weekend. They've played 60 games, and they haven't stopped for the last 6 or 7 months. And, you know, so as a football coach, I don't want to compete with that. I don't want to make kids have to choose. So at this point in July 12th, we've had 3 days of mini camp, and that's it. We're going to have 2 7-on-7s next week. And then we're going to have 4 days of regular camp, and that's all we're going to do from a football perspective.
But you bring up a point of what you do, okay? And it's always interesting when you kind of – and a lot of this is stemming from, like, social media. You can call them debates or discussions or people just getting PO'd at one another. But there comes a point, though, where you have to feel that maybe some of that is impeding a little bit on what you do as football coach, where you're doing less, but then maybe some other sport is kind of doing more, and you're wondering, well, is this impacting what I do? And is it impacting the kid? So, you know, kind of following some of that is interesting, because if you say anything, some people in other sports can say, oh, typical football coach. He's just mad because people want to play whatever sport, and he's PO'd about it. Typical football coach. That's the thing I'm seeing today with – I mean, football is the sport that is more on trial.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just because of the contact nature of it, and the way things were done in the past. I mean, like it or not, we all played under a militaristic, you know, we're going to try to turn these guys into Marines. And
yeah, you're going to have real 2-a-days, yeah. And we're going to hit 5 days a week and get ready.
And if our kids are going to be
ready. Get the smelling salts out.
If our kids are going to be ready on Friday night, we've got to bury them, you know, all through the off season so they can win the fourth quarter. And what we've found over time is, you know, our kids weren't playing their best on Friday night because they were beat up. And we just kind of, personally just considered that's kind of a rite of passage. You know, that's part of football. And at football, it is a violent sport, and you are going to get dinged up and things like that. You know, but as a coach, I think it's our job to try to find that right mix of, you know, how much, when to push a little harder, when to back off. And so that's really been our focus over the last few years on, you know, what's the minimum amount we can do and still be effective, as opposed to how much can we do and fit in. You know, we try to figure out how much we can cut out.
Yeah, and that's the – but that is the – me in the profession as an outsider looking in. It's a moving target.
Yeah, and thankfully for us, you know, we've had some success. So it's a little bit easier. You know, we've won some games for us to make some of those changes because, you know, we're not taking over a brand new program. And I think sometimes when you have a struggling program or you're taking over a new program, you want to outwork everybody and you want to do as much as you can because you want to build this program up. You know, we probably won, you know, over the years at Central despite some of the things that we did because we had good athletes. And so, you know, because we've kind of built a culture and you know, people believe in what we're doing, it's a little bit easier for us to go off the script and do things a little bit different. If we were setting it 0-9 and I was only using 9 football contact days, you know, the community would probably be like, well, those guys aren't even practicing. No wonder they're not winning. You know, but, you know, winning cures everything. And you know, at this point, we've been able to win some games. And so that's, you know, allowed us to do some things maybe different than some other people do because, you know, I guess we don't have the heat on us, so to speak.
Well, and you perfect, you know, you mentioned the word heat, and this is a good segue here, using it in a different term, talking about actual temperature outside. And I saw this conversation on the heat acclimatization issue, which football coaches have to follow in the August months when the season officially starts practice. And some people were discussing, well, geez, you play these baseball four or five baseball games in the summer. Well, that's outside IHSA or interscholastic purview, right? Mm-hmm. But still, you know, well, that is an interesting point. So they can do whatever they want to, and then this sport has this heat acclimatization. And then so they were talking about baseball, but I said the hottest I've ever been in my life has been at a high school basketball shootout in the summer where there's no air-conditioned gym and there's no rules regarding that. And then you go to football, and boom, you got to follow this. And boom, you got to have this schedule with leading up to when you can contact. I mean, it's the administration of all this stuff for doing football is a lot more complicated than it used to be in the past, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And even from your playing days.
It's kind of like, you know, it's the squeaky wheel gets the grease. You know, the big conversation is concussions and heat-related things. And so, you know, if I'm sitting in the IHSA shoes, I don't want to be sitting on my hands and not doing anything when this is the public outcry. And so, you know, they're going to try to do everything they can, you know, under good judgment. They're trying to make the game safe. But there's not as much about baseball, you know, there's not as much about basketball. And so it's kind of like, okay, if there's not a lot of talk about it, let's not change what's going on right now. But, you know, football's has been under attack, you know, and so I think the IHSA is trying to get ahead of it and create ways to try to make the game safer. And, you know, I think at some points it holds, you know, it takes the common sense away from the coaches, which sometimes gets frustrating. You know, but obviously
because there's just one example of somebody doing something completely stupid, and then everybody has to fall under that purview.
You know, there's that,
and you say, well, we kind of do that right now, but maybe, I mean, let's be honest, maybe we want to be able to, I'm not saying get away, but maybe we'd want a little more leeway with this or that. I mean, the confinement of you have to do this.
Right. You know, take like it seems like ever since we've put these acclimatization things in, August has been nice weather. I mean, we haven't had and we go at 6 a.m. in the morning. So, you know, sometimes we've had guys out there in long sleeves because it's 58 degrees, you know, and I think some of the timing, you know, if I wanted to go out and do an hour and a half, of work, and then maybe go in and do something and come back out within the hour, you know, I have a time limit of, I have to spend 4 hours of not doing anything. Well, you know, to ask a kid, especially in our rural community where our kids are already, you know, we go early so they can go work or do whatever else they need to do, to tell a kid they need to come in at 6, practice, take 4 hours in between, and then come back is, you know, not feasible. So, you know, we just go the 2 hours or 3 hours. We don't do any of the other walkthrough stuff. We get in and get out and let our kids do whatever they need to do. And I think that's why our numbers have stayed, you know, mid-50s and even close to 60.
Well, and I know you don't hear it as much as maybe some other people that hear it that sit in the stands or sit near the stands. And when we talk about, you know, less contact being more, but then you'll hear, you know, a lot of old timers during games, well, the, you know, it's clear, you can see it as plain as day. There's not enough tackling practice anymore. Is there not enough tackling practice? I mean, when you say you can't hit as much, but then, you know, you see the strength and speed of these kids today on Friday nights. You know, if you can't replicate that, you know, on a Monday through Thursday, how does that impact Friday?
Yeah,
I mean, is that that has to be a little bit of a catch 22 in this sport, doesn't it?
It is. Yeah, you got to find the right mix, and you know, this year we had a very veteran team back. You know, we had like 4 guys that had started since they were freshmen. A lot of other guys that had started getting ready for their third year. And so we decided that we were going to go the complete opposite direction. And we only went full pads once a week. You know, we knew our guys were skilled. We knew they knew what to do. We didn't need to go into practice and beat on each other. And, you know, for us, it made our guys a lot more hungry on Friday because we had kind of held them back. I called it caging them up because, you know, that's our nickname is the Panthers. And I would just tell our number one defense, hey, you guys only got 3 reps today. That's all you got. So you better make them good. And it would kind of tick them off because they want to go out and hit. And I think risk reward at the small school level, you know, I think back how I used to do it. Our JV would practice play on Monday night. And then we'd turn around and put them in full pads on Tuesday and have them get beat up by our varsity and then do the same thing on Wednesday. And then maybe your freshmen are playing on Thursday, and then it's Friday night game. I mean, those kids are just constantly getting beat on. And so we decided, you know, we're not going to do that. And so we went helmets only on Tuesday. We installed our stuff. And Wednesday we had a short practice where we hit more. But, you know, I don't know what is enough. I know this, that you can win without beating up on your guys all the time. You know, do some kids need it every once in a while? Yes. I think what it's done is it's forced coaches to concentrate more on the technique as opposed to just the physicality of it. And, you know, obviously, you know, finding that right mix is tough, but you got to know when to back off. And sometimes when you're not winning or things aren't going right, the default answer is to hit and be more physical in practice. But sometimes that sets you back for the next Friday night because you've beat them up all week and they don't feel their best when they play.
But the other rule, though, as you're speaking, I'm thinking about, so the one play equals one game, right? And you can't play more than one game in a night. So JV football is no – the conferences that had JV games on Friday night can't do that anymore. So it's one play equals one game, right?
Yes.
So that means you can play max – is it 2 games a week?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one of those rules that really confines a coach. Now, do I agree? Do I think a kid should play 7 quarters on a Friday night, 3 JV quarters and 4 varsity quarters? No, that's not good for anybody. But can a kid, you know, maybe play half of the JV game a little bit, and then maybe sometimes play, they're playing nickel coverage in the secondary and they can stick that kid out there, or maybe he can return a punt, or maybe he can play in special situations. Now you can't.
Right, yeah. I think, you know, our philosophy was always, you know, if a kid played a lot, you know, played on one side of the ball at the varsity level, let's say we played him at linebacker, then we would try to play him some at running back at the JV level, because if he never played running back for an entire season, he was going to have to play it the next year. But if they were like the guy for us, then we wouldn't play him JV wise. But I think the thing that we would always try to do is take a hardworking kid and say, hey, you know, we're going to put you on the kickoff team because, you know, you've worked hard. You're not quite there to earn one of those spots, you know, on our starting defense. But now you got to question that because if he might be a freshman and maybe he plays quite a bit in the freshman game, you know, maybe he plays in the JV game, you can't put him in on that kickoff team anymore. You can't put him in the last 2 minutes of the game to get him a little bit of varsity experience because that would, you know, go over that limit. So it does hold, you know, I wish there was a way that you could just go to the coaches that are playing a kid 12 quarters a week and say, hey, this is, you can't do this. And, you know, but I mean, I understand. Yeah,
because one rule doesn't fit all.
Right. I understand where they're coming from. It's just, like you said, the one play, you know, one game is, it's going to be tough. It's probably going to kill freshman football for sure at the smaller level, just because, you know, those guys play in that freshman game. They help your JV out. They may not start. But then some of them are on the two deep of your varsity. And if you get down into, well, you know, hey, if this is my backup something, I'm not going to waste him in a freshman game because he might have to play in a varsity game sometime. So now then he doesn't play in the varsity game. Well, now he lost those minutes that he might have. And so, you know, we'll see how it works out.
So when you started coaching, the concussion protocol wasn't probably in play yet. So you've had that. You've had heat acclimatization. You had the new one play equals one game rule. And I like to ask a lot of coaches, you know, looking forward. So you started what year coaching?
2003.
2003, so 16 years. Where do you think this sport, if you can fast forward from 2019, 16 years ahead, where's high school football going to be at in Illinois? And when you talk about the numbers are in decline, and I know most guys I talk to say we hope we can just, you know, stay the level we're at. You know, I'm a believer in eight-man for some of these smaller schools because I think it's got the opportunity to keep the game around a little longer. But where are we headed, you think?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think unless coaches make some serious changes to, you know, the physical demands that they ask their kids to do, you know, within the off season. You know, if we're going to use 25 contact days for every sport, if we're going to, you know, go full pads all the time and beat on each other all the time and you know, expect kids to play through all this stuff, I think we're going to continue to see the decline. And you know, some people might consider that to be a soft way to look at it, you know, but it's reality. And so for me, I think the lessons that are learned through the game of football, I mean, I take myself. Okay. Yes, I played baseball. Yes, I kind of played basketball, but I wasn't very good. But I could be okay at football because I could get off the ball and block people, but I wasn't a skilled guy. And so there's so many kids in our high schools that aren't really skilled. They couldn't go pick up a golf club probably and play. They're not going to be great basketball players, but we can stick them on the offense and defensive line, and they can have success and have fun and learn, you know, what
teamwork's
all about.
But it needs to be celebrated,
yes,
too. Yes.
And so I think we have to keep football. So, you know, as coaches, we really have to look at what we're doing and how much we're doing and figure out, you know, not just say, well, this is what we're going to do, and if the kids don't want to go out, then that's on them. We should be trying to find as many creative ways we can to get kids into our program, you know, treat them the right way. You know, don't try to go out and treat it like you're trying to separate the Navy SEALs out of the, you know, the military or whatever that we grew up in or what I coached
it's
in to be
John
begin.
Rambo
yeah.
out there.
You know, and let the kids go out and have fun like they would in the backyard when they lined up and played football and you know, teach them the safe way to do things and do everything in our power to keep them interested because, you know, if schools lose the game of football, you know, I think the homecoming, we've got some schools around our area that don't have football that have a basketball homecoming. I just don't think that has the same flavor. I don't think you have the same support in the other sports. Not that you don't have the same support, but when it's football, there's one night. It's one game. It's Friday night football. You know, basketball plays 30 games. Baseball plays 30 games. You know, all these different things. Football's still that one sport that kind of is the biggest thing in town when it's going on.
Well, and that's the thing that's saving it is the Friday night,
yes,
as you mentioned, because it's a social event as well as a football game, and mm-hmm. most of school activities, fundraisers, etc., are dealt with around a lot of the high school football games. So, you know, when I look at it, what the exponential growth the skyrocketing growth of youth sports. You know, you can look at numbers. I don't think it's translated then. There's been growth in high school sports, but not nearly the exponential growth that there's been in youth sports. So, long story short, what is the growth of the exponential growth of youth sports, club sports, meant to? I'm talking about overall high school sports. What conclusions do you draw from that?
So my daughter's four. Last year she was three, and they asked her, you know, she was asked if she would play T-ball, and I just said no. I mean, she's not ready to play T-ball yet. And this year at four, we played four games, and of course we don't keep score, we don't do that. It took her to her fourth game to actually finally hit one from the pitcher. And I think so many parents, you know, and this is probably going to make people mad, but they're forcing their kids to start doing things because they might see other kids doing it, and they don't want their kids to fall behind. And then what ends up happening is when you force these kids to start playing 9-under softball or baseball every weekend, how many of them continue through high school? Or do they get burnt out? Do they think that, well, I'm not very good, I'm not as good as so-and-so?
I think that is definitely a situation. Because I can talk about, for example, I can give you an example in my family. My oldest daughter was a travel softball kid, but played for the Firebirds, started playing at a young age. My youngest daughter didn't play, hasn't really played a lot of organized sports. Okay, so she's nine, all right? So this year, great idea, all right? Mercer County girls had an all-sports youth camp. So it's basketball, volleyball. It was for third through sixth graders, so basketball, volleyball, track, and softball. Okay, so my daughter knew a little bit about volleyball. Sisters play basketball, so she knew that, even though she didn't play a lot. Didn't experience a lot of softball and, you know, knew a little bit about track. But, you know, it was interesting because she was really resistant to wanting to go because she knew some of the other kids in her class played travel, softball, or did this or did that. And I just always wonder. Now, she went to the camp and had a good time. Mm-hmm. And we had to kind of force her a little bit, just see, go, and see mm-hmm. if you don't like it. You know, we're not going to force you. And I just think that there's a lot of those situations where some of the kids don't have the opportunity or maybe don't want that opportunity at a young age. And then they're scared or overwhelmed because all their other kids that they know have done it, but may not be that good. It's just because there's so many travel organizations yes. that you and I could go out mm-hmm. On Highway 17 outside the studios and flag down a couple of parents and say, hey, I got Dixon here, the Camp Point Central coach. We're thinking about starting an 8U softball team next. You want to play with us? And 20 minutes later, we probably have a team.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a huge moneymaker for those organizations. And you know, I think the other thing that it does is it – I don't know what word to use, but like dilutes the idea of success because you can go into one of those tournaments on a weekend and potentially win a tournament in, let's say, St. Louis. And after that, you get this huge ring that says you were the such and such
yeah.
St. Louis.
It's a national tournament, but there's 700 of them.
Yes. And so, you know, and this is my argument with baseball. You know, I'm football, so the 7-on-7 circuit really doesn't get down to us. But
that's always the argument from the outside, saying, right. "Well, you know, meatball football coach, he's not saying anything about 7-on-7, but he wants to take another sport on."
but like baseball, I would be very leery of baseball because the baseball kids know whenever their high school season's over, they've got a whole summer of going to this city and that city and staying in hotels and playing summer ball and having fun and doing all that. And I wonder if you know, subconsciously their high school baseball season isn't as important or doesn't feel as, you know, important because they know they can still go play again for the next, you know.
Well, and see, that's the other thing that football is losing the battle on. And they're never going to win it because the games to practice ratio.
Yeah.
You never Well, I say the most coaches I speak to will say, well, practices are way more important than games. Well, the ratio in a lot of youth sports, that's not
right.
You're not proving that out because you played 67 games and practiced 24 times.
Yeah.
Well, football, it's completely for every four practices you have. Now, I'm not counting the first 2 weeks of the season, so 14 practices, and then you get a game. And then it's four practices, another game. Most other sports, the ratio doesn't work that way, and kids are smart enough to realize that. It's a game mentality now. It's an organization mentality. I've talked about this ad nauseum with people, is we say genie out of the bottle. You can't tell kids to go play on their own, and I'm guilty. I testify I'm guilty with my kids because they played organized sports. We haven't conditioned them to go out and play on their own.
Right.
They have to have a coach there to practice.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have a scoreboard running. They have to have three patched officials officiating or two patched umpires, and then they'll play.
Mm-hmm.
So before all those conditions are met that I've conditioned them to want, that's what they'll do.
Yeah, I think
so. You can't say we're ever going to get those days back.
Right. I think it was out in Ohio. I saw it on the nightly news. They actually have a night. It's like Tuesday night where they have games. They have no adults running it. There are no adult umpires. The kids umpire themselves. There's no uniforms. There's nothing fancy. They just go out and play. You cannot yell. If you yell, you are ejected from the facility. All you can do is cheer for your kids. And it'd be like if we all gathered around the park in the old days where kids, you know, moved a little dirt to make a base. And I think, you know, the more opportunities to do that, and you take the stress, and the kids that were interviewed in that, they just felt like a lot of this huge weight was lifted off their shoulders because they could just go out and have fun. And they weren't going to get in the car afterwards and get chewed out because they went 1-for-4 and they got beat by one run at 10 years old against some team out of Nashville, Tennessee, or whatever the scenario is. I've seen it. I mean, some kids have gotten better through doing that stuff. Other kids haven't. You know, kids mature at different times. And I think to think that you have to put your kids in that stuff or they're not going to be successful is not an absolute. And in some cases, if not probably more often than not, it wears kids out. It forces kids to not go out for a sport because they don't want to do that, or their parents can't afford it, or they don't have the time to do it. And so they don't go out for their high school season because they haven't been playing the summer ball or whatever. And I think we just kind of lose that, the impact and just the sincerity that surrounds high school sports because of this huge craze of youth sports and all these games that kids are playing all the time.
Well, and it's interesting because a lot of this has probably come to you upon self-reflection and having to come to the grasp and admit to yourself and look in the mirror, man, I've done some things wrong that I had to change. Well, a lot of people in the profession, they won't accept self-reflection and admit they're doing things the wrong way. So I listen to you and a lot of the good coaches I listen to, and I think we're doing it the wrong way. He needs to be coaching at the youth level. And the guy that's doing it the wrong way at the youth level needs to be coaching at the end of the trail at the high school level, if you know what I mean. I think sometimes we get that wrong. So I reflect back to, you know, how important youth coaches are. And how they can ruin it for a lot of kids, or and I know you've probably been at a lot of events where you have to bite your tongue and say, man, you are way, way out of bounds here. Are you doing this the wrong way? I know when I talk to my brother-in-law, my nephew, you know, going to a lot of youth football games, and you hear some of the coaches that'll say, hit somebody,
yeah.
You know, stuff like, hit who? What are you talking about? You know, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's a little bit of maybe we have it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That the more experienced, better coaches should be coaching at the lower levels, and the less experienced coaches should be coaching at the end of the line at the high school levels. I'm talking about complete interscholastic athletics.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And then you throw the parent aspect in, or the three parents that are coaching the youth team, creates all kinds of animosity, you know, because it's generally the parents of kids that are probably better, that probably play more, and then it creates all that animosity. But I know we're pretty fortunate at Central because Our junior high football coach has been there a little bit longer than me, and we play everybody. You know, everyone gets time. They don't all get equal time, but we try to start 22 different people if we can. And, you know, I was just telling our freshman yesterday, I think our best record ever at the junior high level is like 4-3. I mean, and we've had teams where we went 1-8 or 2 and, you know, or whatever, 1-5. But we don't care, you know. We don't take the biggest kid, put him in the backfield, and you know,
the kid that's gonna be
a lineman or whatever. We don't do the JFL thing. We have a conference with some of the Prairie Land schools, and so you know we're kind of all on the same page. But I know this: if our I guess interest drops off, I'm not opposed to dropping junior high football. You know, you look at the team just 30 minutes north of us, Illini West. You know, they made it in Carthage. Yeah. They won a lot of games without playing, and I know some kids went over.
Well, it's just one junior high team now in the Prairie Land Junior High conference because they're concerned about the differential in numbers with some of the programs, and that's why I wonder too. Do you? It's a sensitive question for the sport because do you need youth football or junior high football to have high school football? And a lot of people will say, oh, definitely you do. You need to give the kid the taste of it. Well, then the counter to that, well, if a kid has one bad experience, and I'm not there's good programs out there that do it the right way, but then if you're looking at the overall impact of the sport, you say, well, have we been doing it the right way at the junior high levels and the youth levels? Well, probably the numbers that we're seeing at the high school level are saying, no, you're not.
Right. You know, and that's kind of what I look at. Okay, who played junior high football and did they play in high school? And we're fortunate, you know, this year I think we only have 12 or 13 freshmen. We had 20 last year. We had 18 the year before, you know. But we've been pretty much getting everybody out of our junior high program, and we've been getting – because we have junior high baseball too at the same time. And our baseball coach, our head baseball coach is also our junior high baseball coach, and he's also a big football guy. He was on our sideline during the playoffs. You know, our starting quarterback this year, that quarterbacked our team to the state championship game, didn't play junior high football. Our fullback and our guy that broke our season tackle record at 5'7", 150 pounds, never played junior high football. They came out as freshmen, and, you know, they were three-year starters for us. And, you know, I tell all of our junior high kids, you didn't have to play in junior high to be successful in high school.
Now, those two kids you mentioned, did they just have a come-to-Jesus moment and say, I want to play, or was it? Did you say, you know, even though you didn't play junior high football, I think you could still you could contribute to this team some way, somehow?
Absolutely. Well, you know, two things. Baseball was their love, and which is fine. And that was their top sport at that time. And, you know, one of the kid that played quarterback is going to go on and pitch at Quincy University. The other kid's going to go to the Air Force. I think football ended up being his favorite love, but our junior high baseball coach would tell him, hey, you realize that these sports are different times in the high school season. You would probably be a really good quarterback because you throw the, you know, you're a good pitcher, da 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 da, you're a strong kid. And he continued to kind of pour into him that way, and because he, you know, he wants to see our football team succeed. And like I said, we didn't treat him any different when they showed up on day one. I mean, in reality, what we see, you know, sometimes the running back kids remember what they did at the junior high level. The linemen don't remember anything. They don't know a blocking rule. They don't know anything. So we start over with everybody as freshmen. It's not like they come in and they've got our system down. It's not until towards the end of their freshman year where they start to understand what we expect. And then hopefully by their sophomore year, they got a good idea. And then when they get to be juniors and seniors, you know, they've got a great grasp. And now we're just tweaking the things that they're doing. So, yeah, it's definitely overrated that they have to do all these things. Now, I'd like them to be active and play as much as they can. But to have to play it in an organized fashion where there's a score kept and all that, I don't think that's necessary for them to have success at the next level.
So how much of an impact, now you can speak to it as it impacts you directly at Camp Point Central, how much of an impact do you feel off-season sports are impeding on in-season sport? Now I'm talking about IHSA, what I define as sports, like football season is in the fall, I'm talking about IHSA calendar, basketball season is in the winter, baseball season in the spring, okay? But then the sports that are outside the purview of IHSA, interscholastic, talking about club or travel teams or whatever, whether it be, and I'm talking about whether it be volleyball or AAU basketball, because I'm hearing more and more why those are becoming such bigger things is because if you want to play at the next level, most of the college recruiting for basketball is at the AAU circuit, which is off-season. They don't recruit during the regular high school season. Volleyball's club volleyball recruiting for those kids that play club volleyball off-season that, you know, basically competes with girls basketball, and you're wondering why, well, this, why isn't this girl playing basketball? Well, she's got club volleyball, and she wants to play collegially, so the scouts need to see her there. Same for baseball, where kids maybe feel they have to play in a fall baseball league, maybe where some college scouts are at, where they get some looks at, or do whatever in the off season. So as a football coach, how much impedance are you seeing on off season impeding on the in-season sport?
You know, from the boys' side, not a lot, really. I mean, I think you still have a group of kids that are what I would call basketball, baseball guys. That's what they do. They're not really interested in football. Sometimes we'll get some of those kids out, you know, and that's okay. You know, this year we had, you know, probably four kids that were on our regional basketball team that also played baseball that I would have loved to have, but they didn't go out. And they didn't go out their freshman year, you know, and that it just wasn't their thing. But as far as our guys that commit to playing football, you know, during the football season, now obviously we got to work around things in the summer, and that's why we don't do a whole lot. But when it's football season, I don't have guys that are missing. If I have guys missing for things, it's usually military. It's usually, you know, they've got a drill thing or they've got something they've got to go on there. But I know on the girls' side, club volleyball, you know, we had a couple girls that decided not to play basketball because the summer basketball schedule was interfering with their softball. And so I think we definitely see that club volleyball is big on the girls' side, but I really don't see it as much on the boys' side, as, you know, some people do. But I mean, AAU basketball is not huge where we're at either. I mean, our high school teams pretty much play their schedules in the summertime in June, and that's pretty much it. But, you know, I think if I was coaching college, I would rather have a kid that led his team, his high school team, to success, was a team captain, more so than I would have if I saw him at a 7-on-7 or an AAU or something like that. Because if he's the captain of his high school team and is leading those guys to success, then obviously he has character and he is a teammate and he has all those intangibles. When you see him out there playing with other, you know, all-stars or whatever you want to call them, you don't know what that kid's like. Is he all about himself? Is he whatever? And I'm not saying every kid is, but I think if I was recruiting those college, you know, kids, if I was coaching college, that's what I would look for. I would look for, you know, what are they like in their high school program? Because that's what they're going to be like when they get here, you know, not what they're like in their AAU circuit.
All right. So when we look at, you know, I hear a lot of, when we try to get balance with multi-sport athletes, all right, I hear a lot of, you know, I'll work with the schedule. You know, I hear the coach say, oh, you know, I want to make everything work. I'll work with the schedule. But I don't hear, I'll try and get that kid to go out for the other sport. You know, it's all work with the schedule. Well, no, I don't really want that. There's a couple of kids maybe that I think could help out, maybe not football, maybe they could help out wrestling, or maybe they could help out what track or whatever other sport it is. So what gripes you the most about this pull for student athletes and this specialization, whether it's written or unwritten rules, or you hear whispers concerning this? What really grinds your gears, I guess, in all this debate?
You know, I would say in the past, essentially guilty as charged, things that I used to do bug me now. And it's not in my own school, because we do a good job of sharing athletes and so forth. But, you know, I know in the past my expectation as the football coach was, if a basketball kid is also a football kid, I want him to show up at 6 a.m. on Monday and work out. And I know he's still got to go to basketball practice Monday afternoon. I know he's got to play Tuesday night, but I expect him to be back in there Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. too, because he's got to get ready for football.
And so you've changed your position on that?
Absolutely.
What about the industry? Have they changed their?
No, because I see coaches all the time, you know, mad, or, you know, they'll tweet a picture of a basketball player that's strong, you know, or looks strong or whatever, and they'll say, see, basketball players lift and baseball players lift and all that. And they're right, they do. But as a football coach, if that's what you are you doing things that are helping them in their sports season? Or are you doing things that are helping your football team in the fall while they're trying to play high school basketball?
Yeah, I got you there, man.
Because if a kid, and I've been guilty of this, if a kid is sore for his Tuesday basketball game, you've lost that basketball coach because he doesn't want his kids to come to your 6 a.m. football session or whatever you call it, you know, if he's not going to be able to perform. Now, I understand, you know, you can lift days of games and things like that. But I would say way too many football coaches, and I was guilty of this, trained everybody like they were off-season football players no matter what they were doing because, hey, this
but
is what we do.
That still goes on today.
Oh, it goes on. You know, we're lucky, and I saw kind of the writing on the wall, and you know, I
but,
kind
but,
of...
But see, what I see that still today. I'm like, it's some school's world. Man, that kid is playing a basketball game tonight, and then... I'm not going to name any schools, but he's over, for example, in Princeville. And then he's got to be there at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, and he just played a knockdown, drag-out game with Princeville. No, you can't do that.
Right.
But see, the other thing that kind of gripes me, and I wasn't a big football guy in high school. I love high school. My favorite sport, if I tell everybody, is high school basketball. I love that sport as much as anything. I love covering it. I love watching it, whether it's summer, in-season, or whatever. But I hear a lot of, like, the blowback or pushback now is, like, I'm getting back at the football coaches. They got all this off-season stuff before, so now it's in their face. These kids are going to be first and foremost. They're going to do this sport or whatever. Suck on that, football. Deal with it. I get a little of that feeling.
I mean, I know at other schools, talking to other coaches, like I said, at Central, you know, when I first got there, I would say we competed. You know, we would schedule things. You know, the rule of thumb was basketball June, football July, but then it kind of started to get intermingled and kids were choosing, and that just creates a bad animosity. And so, you know, from my perspective, you know, our baseball doesn't do anything team-related, but our basketball coach and myself, we share our schedule. And – you know, he stayed off of, I think, every weekend but one this year. I don't do anything on the weekends. He had his Tuesday night summer league. He went to maybe two shootouts, maybe three. And then, like I said, we're going to do 2 7-on-7s in 4 days of camp. And none of it interlaps. You know, there is literally – I mean, the kids that played basketball have had two or three weeks now where they haven't played, and they have another week next week before we even do our football camp. And so, you know, we try to – give them time to be kids. And I know, you know, people always used to hate that, but they need that. They need time off of sport. Otherwise they're going to get burnt out. They're not going to play. They're going to get hurt. Kids they don't sleep enough, whether we like it or not, they don't. So they don't recover like they should. And so if we continue to just make them come to weights, make them go to basketball camp, then they come to football in the afternoon, and then they play. I mean, my parents used to run us from a 7-on-7 at Rock Island to Orion Summer League basketball,
yeah,
boom, boom,
still
boom, and try to figure out how that was all going to work. And, you know, that's crazy now that I think about it, and I would never make a kid do that. I just think that's way too much for them, and you know, it hurts numbers, and it hurts just the overall health of that kid.
And as we wrap up, because I've got you on the mark here for about 50 minutes, but – you know, the adapting or changing a little bit, because I know it's, you know, a lot of it used to be bulk up kids, strength. And now a lot of it I'm seeing, you know, it's the speed and the explosiveness. And I'm not talking about just as football, you know, it's basketball explosiveness or making that first strong power dribble or whatever. Same with basketball or football getting off the ball. And I just kind of reflect on the good teams that I've seen that to me, it has been speed and explosiveness. When I look at the really good Aledo teams over the years, it's speed, explosiveness. And then even a contrast, you look at, you know, Unruh's style at Illini West, they're good teams that really marched far in the playoffs. It was speed, and it was explosiveness getting off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much power. I mean, it's the adapting of the strength and conditioning part, mm-hmm. and seeing more of the push toward the speed aspect more so than the true strength part of it.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you balance both of those? I guess
that's always the magical question, and I get that asked a lot because I started coaching track 3 years ago, and it really kind of changed my mindset on speed because I was a weight room guy, a numbers guy. We need guys squatting 315, squatting 405. We need them benching 300. We need them hang cleaning, 225, and get all wrapped up in these numbers in the weight room. But our best squatters weren't always our fastest kids. We would have kids come in as freshmen really fast that had never lifted, and we would have kids that lifted really hard and were really slow. And so, it's not an absolute correlation. I think every kid does need a base of strength. They need to understand how to move. They need to be able to hinge at the hip and do all these things. But I think when you don't take that kid in, if you cookie cutter it all and you make every kid and you try to get them all to squat a certain number, well, some kids will respond better than that. I had a brother-in-law that was our career rushing leader. He was 5'7", 180 pounds, and he was just strong as an ox, run 4.457 in the 40. He responded really well to strength. We've had other guys that the stronger they got, the slower they got, and the less athletic they got. So not every kid fits that same mold. And so I think if a kid on your team is going out and making plays and he's fast and he's flying around, to go back in the weight room and chase all these numbers and expect him to increase his maxes by another 50 pounds and all that is probably more counterproductive. If he's already performing, there's kids that are naturally gifted. There's kids that work hard to be gifted. We can't treat them all the same way. And so as coaches, we're trying to figure out how to create explosiveness in all of our kids. And, we're going to train them, but we're not going to just train the weight room to make them good lifters. We've got to make sure that we're seeing that transfer into their speed and their explosiveness and their play.
All right. So long story short in our conversation today is – a lot of this involves self-reflection, that you have to a lot of times take a good hard look in the mirror. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So Brad Dixon at what year you started coaching?
2003.
Is a lot different than Brad Dixon at 2019 is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I would fire myself from 2003 if I was the athletic director because I wanted to win, and that's what I cared about. And I treated kids that way. If you performed, I treated you well. If you didn't, I was not happy with you. And, I expected you to show up to everything. And if I scheduled 30 things, you were at all 30. And if you weren't, then you were moving down on the depth chart. And that was just the way
I'm
glad
you're honest about it.
And it's true. And I always tell people that we do what we do now because someone did something to us that made us change, or someone showed us something that made us think about what we were doing. And so we always try to have a why. My offensive coordinator is a calculus guy. He's a numbers guy. And we try to have reasons for why we are doing things instead of we're trying to make them tough or we got to make sure we're in shape. Those are just vague, bland terms that don't really mean anything.
Linebacker hit somebody.
Yes. You hear those things in the stands. So we try to have reasons why, and we don't have it all figured out. But we're going to continue to try to find ways to keep increasing participation, keep our kids safe, keep them healthy, and so they can go out and play hard on Friday nights.
All right, and I know you're an interactive guy on Twitter. So, and I tell a lot of people in these long-form conversations I tell them, it's a starting point. You can go off the beaten path and continue the conversation or take it elsewhere. I'm not saying we're sitting here answering everything and we have all the answers, but I say it's a starting point. If you want to further this conversation, I know you accept private messages on your Twitter account, so get a hold of Coach Dixon if you want to talk about that. We really didn't get into the nuts and bolts of his last season. It speaks for itself, state runner-up, and I know when you've developed those programs, a lot of people in the community think, well, we got there last year, so we plan on going again this year. But I want to end my conversation with you. I just think like the human element of everything is very important, and I'm privileged to get to see a lot of like things behind the scene, and I really like the personal connection people have. And I remember it was a home game for you. It was a playoff game, and you were playing a conference team. You didn't. I think it was the semifinals. Green helmets, right there.
Carrollton, 2014.
So you lose.
Yeah.
It was semifinals, right?
Yeah, semifinals.
And so, of course, we're down there, and I went down with both your brothers. I think Travis Boswell was. I'm going to drop names too. Derek Dixon, Josh Dixon, Travis Boswell. There's one other person with me, and your mother comes up to you, and she has taken it so much harder than you have. And for me watching it, I'm like, man, that's it, man. You want the essence of life. And I'm a sucker for that type of stuff. And I like seeing that type of stuff. So she takes it harder than you, where you, and sometimes you wish you could frame those moments maybe for you down the road where you could see that. Cause it's, you know, it's like a mother son moment, where I can get a little emotional talking about it, where you're consoling her,
mm-hmm.
but you're the coach that just lost. And that's what I tell people, interscholastic athletics, they matter. And moments like that I see matter so much to me. And I'm thankful I get to see some of that stuff, because that's what it's about, man.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine just doing this profession and teaching, showing up at 7:45 and leaving at 3:30 and not having all the chances that I have outside of the four walls of the school to work with these kids. I mean, I've seen these kids 3 days all summer in our workouts. You know, last night I had most of our seniors from last year's team. We met one last time at Buffalo Wild Wings and just shot the breeze before they all went back. And I bought their wings, and you know, it was just fun. It'd been a month since I'd seen them from graduation, and those are the types of things that they remember. I mean, we went to the state track meet this year, and we got to go to the final day and race in the 4x1 or the 4x2, I guess. And, the night before we did it, we decided to go to an escape room, and we spent 60 minutes in there, and we almost got out, but we didn't. But I had our track guys go, "Coach, I still think that was the funnest thing that we did." Yeah. The escape room the night before. not the 4x2 race that we were, not the weekend around the track. It was the escape room that we did off the field. And those are the things that I cherish the most. And the reason why I keep doing this, the wins and losses and all that stuff come and go. There's ebb and flow, talent and dips and all that stuff. But they're still kids, and they still, you know, some of them, their only experiences they get outside of the home was in your sports program. Mm-hmm. And we cherish those, and we try to do everything we can to give them a positive experience.
All right, man, I so love following the local kids here that grew up here. So awesome to get you in the studio and get a long-form interview with you. Really appreciate it. And I know so many people here love following local kids in their careers. So thanks for coming in, and good luck in 2019 with the Panthers of Camp Point Central.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
All right, Brad Dixon with us on WRMJ.